This is a media property that is making editorial decisions. And those editorial decisions are being controlled to a greater or lesser extent by the Chinese Communist Party. And that just doesn't seem to make any sense to me. And then the final point I would make in response to what you're saying is nobody is just saying ban TikTok. The ultimatum is very clear. Divest or it will be banned. In other words, TikTok is fine, even though it is a highly addictive thing. Like, that's a separate issue. But if the national security issue is solved because it is divested from Chinese ownership, then fine. Otherwise, it's a national security issue. So I think making this about free speech is a red herring.
You're listening to the Startup Podcast. This is a Reacts episode. Industry insiders having frank debates about the latest tech, politics, and business news. Whether you're a founder, investor, or operator in a startup, you'll gain insights into how current events connect to broader themes and trends that impact your startup, your investments, and your day-to-day operational decisions. The conversation starts now.
Hi, I'm Emil Michael.
Chris Saad.
And I'm Yaniv Bernstein.
Welcome to the Startup Podcast Reacts. This week, we're going to talk about the Princess Kate controversy. What does the rise of fake content, fake images, and fake narratives mean for democracy? And what does it mean for tech founders and tech investors? We're also going to talk about TikTok being banned in the US. Is this a free speech issue, a national security issue, or something else? And finally, we're going to talk about Apple getting a massive fine in the EU. Is it appropriate? Is it right? Do platforms owe apps anything? And how should founders think about platform risk when building apps in ecosystems like the Apple App Store? All this and more on this week's Startup Podcast Reacts. Stay tuned.
This episode of the Startup Podcast is brought to you by Vanta. You might know that sinking feeling. You're about to land a big contract when they ask about compliance. SOC 2, ISO, PCI, Essential 8. You've just snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. Not anymore. Vanta massively accelerates your compliance efforts and allows you to get those life-changing deals back on track. Don't wait until it's panic stations, though. Get started with Vanta today. They're offering 20% off their prices just for TSP listeners. Do yourself a favor. Hit pause. Go to vanta.com/TSP. That's VANTA.com to get that 20% off. So first thing I wanted to talk about, I think neither of you guys really want to talk about this, but I'm going to make you, is the controversy on the internet, and especially on Twitter, about Princess Catherine, the Princess of Wales. And I think it's really interesting in terms of it's just another foreshadowing of the world that we're going into. So just to quickly set up what's happening here is Princess Kate has got some sort of mysterious health condition. The palace has been very, I guess, respectful of her privacy, but she's having some sort of surgery and she's withdrawn from public life until after Easter. That was the announcement. And then Twitter and the internet did its thing and started spinning out wilder and wilder conspiracy theories about what's going on with her. Fast forward to last week, Kate posted this nice family photo of her and her family on the British Mother's Day, saying, "Happy Mother's Day, everyone." And in a sense, this was treated as a proof of life photo, if you can imagine, from a hostage situation. It's like, oh, look, here she is. She's looking well. Isn't that great? Until people looked closer, and the closer they looked, the more weird stuff there was in this photo. And it looks like it was heavily photoshopped, possibly with some AI in it and so on. And nobody knows. It actually got to the point where the media agencies, the Associated Press and so on, issued what's called somewhat dramatically a kill notice, which means any media property that's using this content that they put out, they've been asked to take it down because it's not accurate and not safe in that sense. And then in response to that, Princess Kate's Twitter account said, oh, whoops, I'm just an amateur photographer who likes to play around with Photoshop. Whoops, sorry about that. But then didn't actually post a legit photo. And so, of course, this has just fueled the conspiracy theories. The reason I wanted to mention this, guys, is that I think it's just another sign of this kind of post-truth era. And it's the first time to me that I've seen the mainstream media really grappling with the different ways in which imagery can be manipulated. I think people are no longer seeing a photo and saying this photo represents the truth. There is now this sub-narrative around every piece of news that comes out, which is, has this been manipulated digitally in some way? And I think we'll just be seeing more and more of this. So do I have your interest?
Not really, but that's okay. It is worth pointing out that with computational photography, every photo that you look at coming out of modern devices is to one degree or another manipulated by AI. The question is only a spectrum of veracity or...
verisimilitude? Truthiness.
Truthiness, yes. The veracity of, like, what is the delta between what was in front of the lens and what is being presented to the viewer? try and understand where you are on that spectrum for every given photo is an enormous amount of cognitive load and becomes very, very interesting the more significant the moment captured by the photo. And this is why it's going to be very, very difficult for us to have these kind of AI annotations to say this photo was doctored. Well, every photo is doctored through the camera pipeline, through the photo publishing software I'm talking about now, Instagram and Facebook. And so you need some kind of intersection of like significance delta from the original.
And this is exactly why I brought this up. I think it is actually, again, it's a harbinger of what's to come. And there's been talk from the big AI companies about like watermarking and so on. But I think this comes back to trust, that old chestnut, right? And I don't know if distributed forms of trust are going to work, but the idea that you can believe your eyes is like well and truly behind you now. And all we have left when we see information is either what's actually in the room with us, which is very limited, or trusted third parties who we actually believe are telling us the truth.
I think therefore I am, right? It's like the only thing you can trust is your own thoughts. And then you can't even trust those.
You guys are making too much of this.
Nah.
insane. Hold on. Instagram photos have been edited since the platform started to make people look good. The reason this was news is because there's mysteries surrounding the princess. And she put it out to quell the mystery. And they were caught with a Photoshop photo of her from a Vogue magazine thing looking well around her children. And anything with the royals in the UK is like, oh my God. We've been in a world where technology could do deep fakes and fake voices. There was some primary, someone faked Biden's phone call as a campaign robocall. Like we're there. This is less of an example of that as opposed to just some like dumb fuckery that happened at Windsor Castle as opposed to the scary moment. This is not the scary moment for me. Like scary moments pass.
Sorry, just to be clear, the reason I find this interesting is not because it is the scary moment, but I think it is the moment where it has become the most mainstream. And I think if you think about what's the royal family useful for, I think this is maybe one thing, which is like, now everybody understands, right? When we're talking about, oh, you know, can we trust war zone imagery? Can we trust political advertising? That was still a bit wonkish. Now you're like, can we trust photos of our favorite royals? Well, we can't even trust those. I think that brings it into the mainstream. And I think that's what's really interesting about it.
Emil, I think your point is a really good one, which is, you know, I was saying the AI manipulation of photos is on a spectrum. And what you are also saying is the level of fake imagery is on a spectrum. It's been increasing over time for years. And you're right. There are apps that have been manipulating faces and skin tone and dark circles and all this stuff for years, just years.
And I don't need it.
For those of us who have been on dating apps pre-marriage, you can't believe anything you see on those apps, right? And the point here is that this continues to progress along the spectrum of manipulation and along the abundance of how many of these photos are manipulated. And the quality and the scale of manipulation is continuing to progress up and to the right and is continuing to be applied to more and more important imagery. As you said, Yanev, of war zones and what have you, and popes wearing puffer jackets. Yeah, we are in a post-truth world, and Stephen Colbert called this, what was it, like 20 years ago? When did he do his famous first episode of the Colbert Report, where he talked about the word of the day was truthiness, about what do you feel in your gut? And there was this information war against the truth from Republicans about like, what does Iraq have, and what is the scale and scope and justification for the Iraq war? And I mean, just now to take this really broadly, I remember the scales being taken off my eyes during the Iraq war lead up and realizing just how deeply the narratives were being built. And to me at that time, it was utterly obvious. It was like plain as the nose on my face that this was a fake build up to a fake justification for an illegal or unnecessary war. And the fakeness has not stopped. It's become an avalanche of stuff. Until now, we don't know. Like now Trump is like, no, you're trying to steal the election by trying to imprison your political enemies, which is me. And it's just like, you know, no, you're, it's like a playground. He said, she said, right? And it's like, what's real? What's real? And we can't even tell from voices or photos anymore.
All right, lads. Well, thanks for indulging me. Let's go into something that we all agree is a very important piece of news, which is some real movement to ban TikTok in the US. Emil, would you like to set this one up and share your thoughts?
Yes. So for the first time, a congressional committee voted 50-0 in the House of Representatives to force a sale or shutdown of TikTok. TikTok's owned by ByteDance, a Chinese company. And what we hear back from the Chinese government's like, there's no sales, either shut down or not. President Trump and a few others have taken the position, even Elon, that this is not a good idea to shut it down, despite how harmful it may be and how much it might be used as a propaganda tool by the Chinese government. But just to give some people scale, there's 190 million TikTok users in the U.S. The company that owns TikTok, and they have a Chinese version called Douyin, does more revenue than Facebook. It is a private company. It's probably worth $700-900 billion. The minutes of use of TikTok makes it one of the most used apps in the history of the world. It would be a monumental decision to shut it down. My opinion on this is just for show. There's no politician with an election coming up in December that's going to take TikTok away from 19 to 26 year olds. That doesn't mean it's not harmful from a propaganda standpoint, but it does mean that it's got more momentum than ever before to shut it down. But there are political realities that I think this just feels like gamesmanship to me, right?
But do you think that they should shut it down? So you think they won't because of political reasons, but this is going to become our theme, I think, on the show. King of the world, Emil. You're the king of the world. Would you shut it down?
I don't know if I'd shut it down. I mean, it's so hard because I feel like you shut something down, something's going to replace it. Like humans have decided they want to use this kind of short form video catchy thing. So therefore, like you shut it down and what comes up in its place. That being said, it is one of the most insane propaganda machines I've ever seen in my life. Like there were people celebrating Osama bin Laden's manifesto on it. Like the mind control it seems to do. And maybe it's just a different degree than other social media. I think other social media is addictive and has harmful effects. And if been used by the wrong ways, the wrong governments, it could also be used to manipulate people's minds. But I guess I'm not sure.
Fuck yeah, I'd shut it down. Like you said, it's an insane propaganda tool in the hands of a fledgling superpower that is not necessarily aligned with the values or the interests of the US and the broader Western alliance. And so to me, it's like, it doesn't seem like a very difficult argument, right? Like the most compelling argument I heard for it is if you think about it as a media property, right? There have always been media ownership laws. And even within a given country, in the past, when media was more fragmented pre-internet, there were laws around media ownership concentration. And then social media happened, the internet happened, and that kind of became impossible. So now you have very concentrated ownership of media. In addition to concentration laws, there are also foreign ownership laws. You don't let a foreign country, especially one that might be not fully aligned with your interests, own the most important media properties in your country. You just don't do it, right? Because the propaganda potential is just way too great. So I think the question is, I think it's pretty clear that ByteDance is a Chinese company. Chinese companies are answerable to the Chinese Communist Party, right? I don't think that's actually under heavy debate. Furthermore, the Chinese government does not allow foreign, US and other media properties free access to their market. So why on earth should this asymmetry be allowed to stand? Why should the US, Australia, Europe, all of these countries, why should they allow this media property that is jacked into, like you said, every 19 to 26 year old's brain to be controlled by the Chinese Communist Party? It makes no sense to me. To me, a ban's actually a bit of a no-brainer. And Emil, to the point that something will take its place. Yeah, something will take its place. And that something will probably be Instagram Reels or YouTube Shorts or something like that. Something that is not controlled by China.
Well, one thing before Chris comments, because I think it's important and interesting. The core of TikTok was a company called Musical.ly, which was an American company that ByteDance bought. How ironic is that? That like the core functionality was something that was developed here and then it was sold for like $1 billion that became this behemoth.
Well, I mean, it's not surprising to me because maybe this is a controversial statement, I don't know, but like China's very good at copying and buying, not very good at inventing and building, right? I think that's a fairly common understanding. It's really interesting to me, just to take a bit of a step back, that this is a really big deal and is a serious propaganda and information warfare problem. But it's just watching the two of you react is quite interesting culturally, right? Because Emil, I think the US and Americans are very hesitant
to interject and litigate what can be said and who can say it and on what platform. And it's like, you have to think twice, three times, five times before passing a regulation, right? And in Australia, it's like, fuck yeah, let's curate everything and everyone and let's make sure it's all regulated within an inch of its life and we should interject in markets all the time. And Australia never saw a regulation it doesn't love.
I reject that characterization of my position, Chris, just for the record.
That's fine. You can do that. I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. I think it is a massive, massive problem. And I think if you're looking at first order effects, it's obvious that you do not want the Chinese Communist Party inserting their narratives into the heart of American and Western culture. I think that's a serious breach of national security and culture. And I think we need to think twice about dictating, as purportedly open free societies with open information, we need to be careful about litigating who can say what and on what platform. And Yonev, you've talked about the asymmetry. No, I don't think we should be doing stuff just because China does it. And yes, they've created an asymmetry and the nature of our open society creates an asymmetry, but that's not, I think, reason enough to race to shutting them down.
I don't think it's a race. I think there's a few points I'd want to address from what you say there. So the first thing is, yeah, it's not about, oh, tit for tat, they're doing it, therefore we should do it. The point is, are we putting ourselves in a position as liberal democracies where our own openness is being weaponized against us? And I think in this case, the answer is yes, right? And the Chinese government is very alive to the propaganda effects of large social media properties, which is exactly why they control them in their own country. And yet, yes, we're allowing theirs in. And while China might hypothetically be worried about US government influence on the minds of its own citizens, it is very clearly manipulating these tools to change the minds of citizens in other countries. And I think that's really dangerous. And like you said, this is a national security question. This is not a free speech question. It's not stopping people from saying things, but you say on what platform they say it on. And this comes back, we were talking about this, I think, was it last week, the week before. Once there is algorithmic amplification in place, this is not just a technology platform. This is a media property that is making editorial decisions. And those editorial decisions are being controlled to a greater or lesser extent by the Chinese Communist Party. And that just doesn't seem to make any sense to me. And then the final point I would make in response to what you're saying is nobody is just saying ban TikTok. The ultimatum is very clear. Divest or it will be banned. In other words, TikTok is fine, even though it is a highly addictive thing. Like, that's a separate issue. But if the national security issue is solved because it is divested from Chinese ownership, then fine. Otherwise, it's a national security issue. So I think making this about free speech is a red herring.
I'm not saying it's about free speech. I'm saying it's about the openness of the Western culture is part of its ideals and part of its nature.
Well, I mean, look at the Cuban Missile Crisis. Like, there's openness and there's openness. It's like, as soon as the Soviets put nukes on Cuba, they're like, oh, well, we're not so open. Again, I think you're weaponizing the term open. If you view it through a national security lens, Western societies and no society that values its security can be open to foreign threats. And that's what this is.
I love this because usually I'm the one that's really passionate. So I'm glad you're fired up about it. But like, what I'm saying is net, I agree with you. This is an egregious example that does need to be dealt with as a national security issue. I'm simply saying there is a slippery slope here where when something isn't convenient to our ideals, and in this case, I don't think it's about convenience. I think it's about an active national security threat. But we need to be careful that when something isn't convenient to our ideals, we say, well, this is being used against us. Our openness or our society is being used against us. So therefore, we should suspend that ideal. Because I think there is a slippery slope there that we need to be aware about. Democracy also is messy and chaotic and is in some cases being weaponized. And there are actually generations of people looking at it going, that's messy. We need a strong man. We need less chaos. We need to control the way these votes and elections play out. And they're looking to other systems to go, well, we should suspend this ideal. And actually, we need a strong man like Trump. There are actually surprisingly large groups of people, often young people and ignorant people, who are starting to think that way, in some cases because of TikTok. And this is a meta concern.
Let me just add some other things that make it, at least for me, a hard question, which is when Twitter went from Jack Dorsey to Elon, the lefties were like, oh my God, this is like now white wing propaganda and it's brainwashing and tilting the media this way. Well, what if, you know, AOC and her pals started another social network that gets viral? Like, in a Western society, it's very hard to control sort of opinion from filtering through these channels now. Yes, it's Chinese Communist Party, but let's suppose they took those same ideals, but someone in the US who is just a radical group who felt the same way. like that's possible, then what would the U.S. government do? Then it's a First Amendment issue.
I mean, I think we have the answer, right? Like, we've got Elon's Twitter and no one's tried to ban it. We have Truth Social and no one's tried to ban it, right? We've got 4chan and, well, I know people have tried to ban it, but they sure haven't succeeded. Like, there's all sorts of crazy shit on the internet and no one's really trying to ban it. So I think both of you are being too protective of this free speech ideal, which is like, oh, okay, you know, we need to let 1,000 flowers bloom, which is ironically, I think, something that Mao Zedong said. But my point is, this is about national security. This is not about free speech or the First Amendment or censorship or anything like that. This is about, do we let another country inside our walls and weaponize a tool, right?
Yeah, and none of those things have 190 million active users.
Which only strengthens the case.
And are not as effective at capturing and manipulating attention and narratives as TikTok is. So that's why no one wants to ban them yet. And I think it's also a little simplistic to say, this is not about free speech. It's not about open society. It's just about national security. No, it's about balancing the needs of all of these ideals and principles and concerns in a democracy. It's about all of those things. They do need to be balanced. Now, as I think we're all saying, the balance is out of whack and it is now firmly in the land of extremely concerning and a national security threat, which might be the principle that trumps all the others. But it is about balancing all of those things.
Yeah, remember Radio Free America still exists. And that was our propaganda channel into Eastern Europe before the fall of the Soviet Union to communicate our idea.
You better believe they tried to shut that down.
They didn't. That's why we put it on shortwave radio so it couldn't be shut down. And like, that's why.
So this is geopolitics, realpolitik, right? It's like, yes,
yeah,
we will try to spread our propaganda to the people in countries that are adversarial to us, and they'll try to do the same to us. And both sides will try to stop the other side from doing it. That's what drives me nuts. Like, sure, fair play to China. They'll try to influence Western opinion in ways that favor them. And we will try to influence Chinese opinion in ways that favor us. We don't just like leave the door wide open saying like, please expose everyone to maximum propaganda. Like, we just don't do that.
No,
like,
that's an abdication
of responsibility.
But yes, but here's where it's different is dictatorial governments can shut down any internal opposition to their ideas that is against the most basic of Western values. And so when you do this, it makes it easier to do that. Right? It makes it easier for us to say, well, these people in our own country have ideals that are counter to our national ideals, so let's shut them down.
Yeah, sure. That's a slippery slope argument. And that's what happened with McCarthyism and all that stuff. Like, yeah, you got to be careful, right? But would you say that McCarthyism and hunting Reds under the bed and so on is a good argument to say, well, we shouldn't have opposed the Soviet Union? No, you're saying, okay,
no,
like, there's a slippery slope
that.
There. And therefore, we need to make sure that we don't overreact, but we should definitely react.
Yes. So I started with saying, like, it's not as simple as it all seems to me. There are just complexities to it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I also worry, on the flip side, I worry about the US's tendency to make everything a slippery slope argument, right? Like, well, we can't pass common sense gun laws because it's a slippery slope. We can't provide people basic social safety net because it's a slippery slope to socialism. And it's like, everything is a slippery slope to some nonsense extreme. And that's on the other side of the argument, right? And it was like, come on, guys, we can do reasonable things to curtail the most extreme outcomes and externalities. And so that's also the concern for me. But I agree, it's not so much like, well, if we do this, it's easier to do the next one. To me, it's like, what are the principles by which we will do this? And how do we start applying those principles consistently so that it isn't capricious and arbitrary? And yeah, this is an egregious example, and so it's obvious. But what are the principles that make it obvious so that we can apply them consistently over time? So that's what I would like to see from this as well.
And also, we let it happen. Our education system in the US has failed our people in allowing them to be independent thinkers and all the things that allow at least some of this brainwashing to happen.
So, Emil, welcome to my side about the Facebook episode a few episodes ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right. It comes back to like, India banned this 2 years ago before it became like embedded into the brains of their citizens. We didn't. And now we don't have the culture to sort of have people reject the propaganda in any meaningful way. It's being piped into their reptilian brain.
Yeah.
But let's get even one concentric circle away from this and even more controversial, I think. Some of these narratives have basis in fact, right? And we need to wrestle with that as well, right? It's very unpopular to say that part of Putin's argument is based in fact, that the US does do shady shit and that they pretend like their shit don't stink. The reality is that the CIA created bin Laden and hung him out to dry to fighting the Soviets. And so part of his quote-unquote manifesto is rooted in fact. And so it does require education and literacy to say, yes, these are things we've done wrong, and these are facts. And now we need to learn from that history and curtail our worst impulses and not just whitewash the entire history and go, well, no, bin Laden had no facts in his argument and Russia has no facts in their arguments. No, we need to understand those facts, engage with them and correct their own behaviors. Too controversial?
Yeah, but wait. Like, we're the only country in the world, like, not the only. The values that the Four Eyes have, New Zealand, Australia, UK, and US, are like the most self-critical countries in the world, right? Like, we beat ourselves up about the mistakes. Like, we could say out loud that the Iraq war was based on a false premise. Most countries don't have that self-reflection element to them. Like, I feel like who does it better than those four countries that were sort of generated on the same values?
That's fair, Emil. And I've heard you say that before, actually, about Elon and about the US. Like, well, okay, give me a better example. And I think that's a fair argument, which is, you know, amongst all of the shitty countries, we're the best. But I do think there's something to be said about, like, okay, we may be better than the rest, or we may perceive ourselves to be better than the rest because of the narratives we carefully control. But, like, I don't think that's good enough. I think it is worth continuing to strive for a more perfect union, to continue to strive for a better, more fair, more just society, right? And in some ways, we do it better than the rest. In some ways, we tell ourselves we do it better than the rest, and that's a little bit of bullshit. And in some ways, and in many ways, there is still a giant delta between what we do and what our ideals are. And I think it's worth wrestling with that.
But of course, but who wants to move to China from America? And how many people want to immigrate to Australia, Canada, New Zealand, US, whatever? Yeah. The proof's in the pudding. The numbers just show it. Like, as imperfect as we are, it's still our system is the envy of the world with all its faults. That doesn't mean we shouldn't get better, but it does mean, like, we've gotten some things right.
Yeah. And in the meantime, I would actually make one other point, which is maybe also controversial, which is about propaganda. For better or worse, propaganda is part of people's lives, right? Like, what propaganda means is sharing information with people in a way that will sway their opinion in a particular direction. And this, I'm responding to what you were saying, Chris. It's like, that can include facts. Propaganda is not about lying necessarily. In fact, a lot of good propaganda is not lying. It is facts presented and framed in a certain way, the selective choice of facts and so on. And so, you know, like with a lot of things, I think there's black hat and white hat propaganda. Like, countries need to create a national narrative, and that's also propaganda, right? And I think the point is here is, yeah, sure, TikTok might be filled with facts, but which facts and whose interests is the presentation of those facts serving? And I think that is really the question. Do you want that in the hands of China? Just to put a bow on it from my point of view.
I think ultimately net banning it is the right decision. I do think, though, there is a need, a real desperate need for all of us in the Four Eyes, as you say, Emil, to be aware of those facts and engaged with those facts that are unpopular or uncomfortable.
Yeah, sure.
Because we need to know the history. We need to know the truth.
But on our own terms.
On our own terms.
Not on Russia's terms.
No, not on Russia's terms. I agree with that wholeheartedly, of course. And I agree, of course, like, who's doing it better? There was a moment there, actually, after I left Uber, I went to a bit of a trip around the world and I spent some time in China. And it was pre-China doing some of the most, like, their most recent bout of insane nonsense. And I was like, hey, this is thrilling and exciting. And I met some of the Uber China people. And I was like, maybe it's worth moving to China for a while. These people are very alive to tech and it's all firing up. And then you start hearing about the Uyghurs and you start hearing about all this other stuff. You're like, no, maybe not. Let's not do that. I got a quick distaste in my mouth about that.
This episode of the Startup Podcast is brought to you by Vanta. The team at Vanta are passionate about helping you secure your business by vastly cutting down on the time to get compliant with frameworks like ISO 27001, SOC 2, and Essential 8. Vanta lets you close deals, sleep better at night, and get back to building your product. Help yourself and help the podcast by going to vanta.com/TSP for an exclusive 20% off deal. Okay, let's pivot to the next topic, which is, again, about banning things, in a sense, which is the EU has levied a massive fine on Apple. I think it was $2 billion. Does that sound right, Emil? Or maybe 2 billion euros? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Basically for anti-competitive behavior, which is around the fact that it charges companies 15 to 30% App Store commission But then it competes directly against those companies. So this is the Spotify versus Apple Music example. And the EU ruled that anti-competitive and basically gave Apple this massive fine. And I can't remember all the details, but basically they got to stop doing that. So what do we think about this?
God, the EU is so heavy-handed with their regulations. We all live in a stupid cookie except world because of the EU. So like my brain breaks. I'm like, God, what is the downstream impacts of this like stuff? Like Jesus Christ. So it always makes me nervous. That being said, I understand. The thing I think is for me the most problematic of these platforms from an antitrust standpoint is when they prefer their own ancillary products to other products on their platform. In the Spotify case, or when Amazon competes against its own marketplace sellers with their own product. I remember when we were buying ads on Uber, I don't know if you remember this, Chris, in the App Store, go search for Uber, and on top, they would sell the ad to Lyft.
Yeah.
So like you were forced to buy ads when someone was searching for your app so that you wouldn't get sideswiped. That just,
I call those protection racket ads. Yeah, it's like, yeah, nice search result you have there. It'd be a shame if something happened to it.
Right. So you're like, that just seems unfair. But on the other hand, Apple created an amazing device. They created an App Store ecosystem. Their phones are very safe from a hacking standpoint. And they're like, we should benefit from this. So why am I going to have a sideload App Store? Why am I going to allow someone else to just make me a hardware device and not the software that wraps around it? So I'm opposed to specific behaviors. I'm not opposed to them having a revenue share based on the quality of their product.
Apple has created billions and billions of dollars of value with their App Store.
Tens of billions.
Tens and billions of dollars. And I don't know if all the listeners will remember this, but before the iPhone and before Windows CE, which was irrelevant, there was feature phones. And feature phones came with a little snake game and a little calculator app and whatever. And to get your app on that phone was near impossible. I mean, basically impossible. You had to cut a deal with the OEM or the network and try to build some dinky little piece of shit. There was no ecosystem. There was no platform. There was no marketplace. And the introduction of the App Store was the first best way that real software could live on and thrive in the mobile ecosystem. That was an incredibly important innovation for mobile computing. So that's part one. And part two is platforms cannibalize the application layer. That's a rule. It's like a law of gravity. It's a law of physics. Platforms cannibalize the apps. And that is a platform risk that's baked in. We were talking about platform risk in the last episode. And so as Spotify, as Uber, as Facebook, you have to factor platform risk into your business model. And so to pretend like, oh, well, you have a platform? Well, now you need to let everybody on your platform in this egalitarian way, and you must not compete. And it's like, shut the fuck up. We created the device. We created the operating system. We created the App Store. We created the opportunity. We created an entire category of mobile computing, and we will continue to innovate and iterate on this platform. And when you build a build software on that platform, you do it by our rules, and you factor platform risk into your business model. You're a big boy. You're a big girl. You know how to do that. Go and do that. I don't need the EU to protect my business with bubble wrap. I'm a platform guy. I build developer platforms. That's one of my specialties. Would we have rathered that Apple did not build an app store and a developer platform? Because some lawyers would have gone like, hey, that's going to expose ourselves to risk. We're Apple. We know how to vertically integrate and build incredible software. We don't need this noise. Or would we have preferred the lawyers and the product managers and whatever to go, yeah, let's open this sucker up and create a multi tens of billions of dollar opportunity for the rest of the world? And I would prefer the second one.
I think that's a straw man argument though, Chris. And I think, again, you're wrapping this in kind of emotive arguments, but this is about anti-competitive behavior. And this is about antitrust law. Like the last time something like this happened, it happened in the US and it happened to Microsoft. And it was about Netscape versus Internet Explorer. So this is not just about the EU's sort of whatever views we have about whether they overregulate. And yes, I hate those cookie pop-ups too. This is about, yes, when you build a monopoly and you build a big business, you're entitled to reap huge rewards from it. And Apple has reaped huge rewards from the App Store. And of course they would do it again because they made a fuck ton of money out of it. And of course they're entitled to create products and the platform can cannibalize the app layer. But they also charge these 30% fees on the App Store, right? So it's not just that they're like, hey, there's Spotify and there's Apple Music and we're going to make Apple Music a better product. They are basically hobbling Spotify by charging them 30% and effectively charging themselves 0%. And that means that even if Apple Music is an inferior product, it will eventually win because of that massive economic advantage it has. And that is what monopoly abuse looks like. And so I think the argument at the very least is extremely valid.
Remember, you're talking about competitive behavior in a marketplace they created.
Just because they created it doesn't give them, like, when you reach monopolistic scale, this is the whole point about antitrust laws, Chris. This is not about saying that capitalism is bad, but it's also about saying when you reach a level of scale as a private company, you no longer allow free markets to have free reign because it starts to hurt the Commonwealth.
What I'm talking about is not that they created the category, Android, iPhone, whatever. They created the App Store marketplace, the platform that makes it possible for apps to exist on the iPhone. Prior to that, it was not even possible.
Yeah. So answer me this, Chris. Is it possible to have an alternative App Store on iOS? It's not, because Apple doesn't allow it, right?
But what I'm saying is, prior to the iPhone, there was no App Store. There was no marketplace. There was nothing to be competitive in. They controlled the device, or rather the OEMs were in charge of the device, and there was no marketplace. And so now we're saying, well, you created a marketplace that was not present before, and you are being anti-competitive on your own devices in your own marketplace.
Yeah, too bloody right you are, right? Like, yes,
it's a private space. It's a private space.
It's not. When it reaches a certain level of scale, it simply isn't. It's like, I don't know, you can make the same argument about employment laws. And I've heard employers say it. It's like, hey, man, I'm creating jobs. So why are you telling me, like, how much I should pay people and what rights and conditions they should have? Because that's what you do to have an effective society.
Let's talk about this historical example, because you raised it on Microsoft. The antitrust problem with Microsoft is Microsoft had an operating system that was ubiquitous, and they basically forced Internet Explorer, the browser, on people and made it difficult to put your Netscape browser on there, right? And they also had a Windows operating system and tied Office, the Office productivity suite, to it. The DOJ didn't like that either. So they made them sell that Office suite on Apple. And lo and behold, 15 years later, Apple was way more dominant, you know, selling their operating system with their own version of browser and their own. So, like, competition sort of fixed that problem without DOJ needing to actually do anything about it in retrospect.
Well, hang on. No, you said that Microsoft put Office on Apple because of the DOJ. So, in other words, yeah, it worked exactly as intended.
Yeah, but that didn't make Apple great. Apple was great because they made integrated hardware and software.
No, I actually would disagree. I think that Office coming onto Mac at the time basically saved Apple.
I actually think the thing that made Apple viable was the web, because everything moved to the web and now it didn't matter what operating system you were running.
I think that's kind of anachronistic. Like, eventually that was true, but at the time I think Office was critical.
I actually struggle with the Microsoft antitrust thing even more than the Apple thing, because Windows was open, and when they say it was bundled, I mean, yeah, like, Internet Explorer was included free and Office you still have to pay for and it ran on Windows, but like, it wasn't bundled the way Apple's iPhone is bundled. I think if there's an argument to be made about antitrust, it's much stronger with Apple than it is for Microsoft.
I completely agree.
Completely open platform. You could run anything on it. And I just didn't understand that case very much at all. It just felt like punitive and arbitrary.
Yeah. Well, so there is this concept in antitrust called tying. You have a monopolistic product and you tie another product to it.
But how was it tied?
Well, because Netscape was charging X dollars a browser, and Microsoft says, well, I'm charging $1 a browser or zero, and I'm tying it to my platform. That's monopolistic. So by definition, I'm destroying that other business. Whether you think that's a valid concept or not, that was the concept. Here's another one that's current, and it's not Apple. Microsoft Teams, which comes with every Office bundle for free, not Zoom. Like, how do we feel about that? It's a shit product.
Yeah, but this is the thing that I'm talking about a little bit, Emil, which is like the slightly arbitrary nature of, like, all software expands to include all features, right?
Right.
And so just because there's a software called Slack that happens to do chat, I mean, who's to say that Teams doesn't belong in SharePoint?
But here's the point, and this is, I think, what makes the point about the Apple case and what makes it different and makes it a stronger case than the Microsoft case back in the 90s. If Microsoft charged Slack a 30% commission on every sale they made in order for Slack to be operating on Windows, then that's kind of fucked. Like, giving it away for free is one thing, but like, they're taxing them, they're hobbling them, right? And I think that makes it really unfair.
I agree with you that, if there is an antitrust case to be made, Apple is in a far more egregious and problematic position than I think Microsoft ever was. What I believed to be true, and I'm not an expert on this, but what I believed to be true at the beginning was that Apple was charging a tax to use Apple payment rails. So if they used Apple Pay, they would take a piece of that. I think over time, what they've done is they said, you have to use Apple Pay or you exactly. have to pay us, whether or not they're using Apple Pay. And I think that's where they've crossed the line, actually. I think clearly crossed the line. I think you provide utility and you charge a tax for it. So you provide the app store, and if you charge money for the app, you tax that upfront. I mean, if you want to promote in the app store, there should be a fee for that. If you want to use Apple payment rails, there's a fee for that. But if you want to use Stripe inside your app to facilitate a payment that does not go through Apple rails, I think that's rent seeking and completely over the line, because you're not providing utility in exchange for a tax. So I think that is clearly beyond the pale. All right, let's wrap things up. Emil, how can people find you on the interweb?
They could find me, Emil Michael, on X at Emil Michael. That's the best channel.
Awesome. And you guys can find me anywhere on the internet at Chris Saad or on my website, chrissaad.com. Yenev had to bail at the last minute. He had some commitments. But as always, guys, thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you in the next one. Bye-bye.
This episode of the Startup Podcast was brought to you by Vanta. Vanta helps businesses get and stay compliant by automating up to 90% of the work for the most in-demand compliance frameworks. With over 200 integrations, you can easily monitor and secure the tools your business relies on. Head to vanta.com/TSP for 20% off their incredible offering and start unlocking extra revenue today.